Just aggravating, because if it's not in sequence, then I got to try to get it all lined up. So, all right, what's going on, man?
Man, I don't know. Just got off work, come hang out a little bit.
I heard that. Well, let's get right into it.
Sounds good.
You're listening to Off the Gas and On the Mic with Chase Holland.
So welcome back to another episode of Off the Gas and On the Mic with Chase Holland Racing. With us today is special guest Chase Cooper, last year's Crusa Points champion. So super excited to have you in today, and I think it's extremely relevant to have you on right now as we're chasing the points title. So what's your name?
I'm Chase Cooper from Perkinston, Mississippi.
What's your social security number?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Awesome.
Won't do you much good.
No. Well, we're glad to have you. Thank you for coming in with us today. We just want to ask you a couple of questions, see your perspective on crate racing, and, just see what you think of everything.
I'm glad to be here.
Good deal. Well, let's start here. How did you get your start in racing?
So my dad and my uncles, they raced from the time they were young. They run flat track motorcycles and then ventured into cars. And when I got old enough, there was a road course track, asphalt road course here in Socia. And dad brought me out there, and we had a yard cart literally from Sam's. And we went and did that one time, and he told me if I wanted to keep doing it that we needed to get some better equipment. So the next week he went and bought a go-kart, and that might have been the best thing or worst thing he did. I don't know.
That fueled the addiction. I never knew that there was a road course track here. That's awesome.
It was. It was owned by the Morgans.
Morgans.
Ronnie.
Okay.
Ronnie and Shane. Yeah. I don't know if they still live there in Socia, but it was back behind their house, and it was on Sunday afternoons, and they had a pretty big turnout back. I was 8 years old, so how many ever years that was.
Well, that's awesome. So you said your family flat track race, and I remember hearing stories. I didn't know. I thought just he'd be your uncle. I knew Rusty raced flat track. So your dad raced that too, or?
Yeah, dad and Jeff. Jeff, to this day, I believe, is the only native Mississippi rider to have a national AMA number.
Really?
Yeah, and I think it was in, I want to say, 86. But mainly dad and Jeff did it. Rusty did do it, later, but he's quite a bit younger than both of them.
Gotcha.
So back, I guess it would be in their teenage years. They probably had graduated high school, but every weekend they would be going to kind of what you're doing. They'd go to Illinois, Indiana, and drive all night to get up there, race, and then drive all night to come home.
So I guess you could say they had a heavy impact on your racing career, obviously. You had no choice but to be a racer coming from a family of racers. It just fell into your lap almost.
Yeah, growing up at the racetrack, it was kind of all I wanted to do. And obviously, as a kid, I wanted to do it professionally. And we just didn't have the resources. And at the time, we kind of lived in a bad part of the country for racing, other than the dirt track racing every Saturday night. But we had talked about, when I was go-kart racing, moving to the Carolinas. And that deal just kind of fell through. I'm sure it was a financial burden back then. So it all worked out, like you said earlier. Everything happens for a reason, so we're just making the best of it.
Right on. Well, what do you do today? What do you do for a living, Chase?
So I work at a company in Gulfport, Mississippi. Seaman Composites is the name of it. We build, I don't know how much I can say. We build a lot of things for Navy submarines. We'll leave it at that. That way I don't get in trouble. And but I am a CNC programmer. Me and my cousin Jeremy are the two programmers there. And we have machines that can, from the size of a ball joint up to, we can fit 100-foot long boats in.
So really?
It's a pretty good operation down there. And I worked down there when I was younger and kind of came back February of last year. So everything's going good. The best thing about it is 4/10s and off on Friday, so we can go racing when we want to and not have to worry about working and trying to get home and cleaned up and loaded up. So
so I won't ask you what the coolest thing you manufactured there is, because you probably couldn't tell us. But what is the coolest thing that you've ever manufactured, whether it is CNC, manually machined? What would you say is something that, like if you were to show somebody, what are you grabbing off the shelf to show them or pointing out to them?
Probably any race car part that we needed. You know, I've been fortunate enough to work in just a couple of shops. It's not like I traded jobs a lot, but I do have a lot of resources for machining. So when we need something in a hurry, it's no problem to make it.
Well then tell me something. What's the coolest thing you made for a race car? What's been the most practical or most useful thing that you've created for a race car?
Man, I don't really know. As far as just, I don't know if we'll call it general fabrication, it's probably the pit cart we built last year. Just kind of, I designed it on SolidWorks and got all the cut dimensions and everything and kind of built it. But as far as machining wise, I really don't know. There's a couple things we've tried. We thought we were smarter than the engineers that built the cars. So we've tried to move a couple of things around, and some of it worked halfway and most of it didn't.
It wasn't successful, huh?
No, so most of it's not worth talking about a whole lot.
So you're a CNC machinist. You race on the weekends. How did you land your ride? How did you come about driving for Pilgrim Motorsports?
So that's a funny story. I think it was in 2018 or so. I was trying to build a shop at the house, and I knew Joey lived somewhere around there, but I didn't know exactly where. But I knew him from racing years ago, and so I called him, asked him about doing a dirt pad for me, and he come over one Sunday and looked at it. And I didn't know what the price was. He said, I'll make you a deal. He said, I'll do the pad. I'll bring my dozer over and do everything. He said, I just bought a modified, and it needs a lot of TLC. So he said, if you'll get it, go through it and get it ready, I'll do that dirt pad for you. Well, at the time, I was like, well, I got a lot more time than money. a lot more time than money. So
right.
We struck up a deal there, and I did my part. He did his part. He did his part a whole lot faster than I did my part, though. So that was kind of a little running joke there for a minute. Was, you know, it took him 2 days, took me 2 months. But but price wise, we were right there together. So anyway, got the modified going, and they went racing, him and Ty, for, I don't know, probably a year. And I'd go every now and again.
Right.
And
were you racing at the time?
I was not. Didn't have a ride.
Gotcha.
Couldn't afford it. So right. Just went and helped him, went and helped Jeffrey. Probably went to the racetrack a total of 5 times.
Right, right.
So at the end of that year, he called me and said that he had bought a sheet metal brake, and he wanted to do his own body. And he asked me if I'd come help him. I was like, well, yeah, you know, that's no problem. So I rode over there, and we started hanging out and built the body and all that good stuff. And that was the start of 2020. So we went racing one time at Why Not for the Battle of the States with him driving.
Right.
And then COVID hit. So there was no racing. It was hanging out in shop at the house, you know, Well, he had a street stock car that he was trying to sell that Ty had.
Right, right.
Ty was in the modified now. So he said, hey, I got this street stock car. We're trying to sell it. But nobody wants to buy it without it racing. I said, I understand. He said, if you'll put it together, I'll buy a motor. You can race it until it sells. I said, that's a win for me, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So I like going to the racetrack, whether I'm racing or helping, you know. So we put the street stock car together, went and raced it a couple times, and we was actually at the Street Stock Nationals. And he called me. He said, hey, don't wreck that car. It's sold. I was like, well, crap. You know, there goes my ride. Right. But I guess between the friendship we had built and he said, look, I have this other car. It was over at Noah's shop at the time. And he said, I'm going to go get it. You can drive the other one. So that's kind of where it started. And we have upgraded and upgraded and upgraded. And now we're sitting there with the two Rockets and hadn't raced them much this year, but they're there when we want to.
That's right. But y'all did enough racing in the past 2 years to account for y'all not being here this year.
Oh, definitely. So. Definitely. It was nothing to the extent of probably your races a year, but working full time and trying to race, I mean, we was racing probably 30, 35 times a year. So
that's still a fair amount. You know, that's a full season for sure, especially around here. So, you know, along the lines of Joey Pilgrim, he owns a trucking company and stuff. And I think the world of Joey. Joey's he's a family friend from way back. And he's always had really good equipment and good stuff like that. So, and I remember, like you said, I remember you from the kart days. You know, I think you ran go-karts around about the same time era that I was racing go-karts. But I never knew you to race full-body cars. And then all of a sudden, we heard that you were going to be driving for Joey and stuff like that, and you had done some work and stuff like that. And then I heard how good you are and stuff like that. And not that I thought you were bad, you know. It's just there was no record of you to me. So I heard those things, and then we started watching you and keeping up with you, and we were like, wow, you know, this is impressive. He's going to be really good in Joey's stuff. So I guess that. What was it, a full season or a half a season that you ran the crate late model before the season was over and y'all determined that y'all were going to crate race, like for points or how did that come about? How did the points come about?
The points just kind of the first year, so say the start of 21, we just raced. We raced when we want to. If we wanted to go out on the boat that weekend, that's what we did.
Right.
So then you get towards the end of the year, and at that time, I think we were 11th and only had 13 races. So I was like, well, we can get one more race. We can get into the top 10, go to the banquet, and see what it's about.
Right.
Well, the very last weekend, it rained out. So we missed that. So the next year, I always say I'm not racing for points. I do not want to race for points. I never have wanted to race for points. So, again, we go out in the 22 season, and we're just racing. And halfway through the season, we kind of get on a hot streak. And we run third in the points in 22. So, over the winter, I talked it over with Joey, talked it over with my wife. And we determined – if we were going to race for points and put everything into it that we had, it was going to be the 23 season. So
right.
We went into 23, you know, expecting, as long as we were competitive, to go all out and try to win that. And
we talked a little bit about your introduction and stuff, who you are, what you do, and how you landed your ride with Pilgrim Motorsports and stuff like that. So our next question is going to be, walk us through your journey through the crate racing USA points. You know, did you just, obviously you were intentionally racing for points, but like I mentioned, did you just come out winning races? Was it like at the beginning, were you like, man, this is gonna be easy, or were you like, uh-oh, I don't know what we're gonna do here?
So a little bit of both, honestly. We started out the 23 season in East Bay for the Crate Winter Nationals, and we were down there for 3 days, qualified on the pole all 3 days, won two of the heat races, and our best finish was fourth or fifth, and had a good car in the feature race the last night, and just circumstances got us.
Right.
So, but no, we came home, kind of regrouped. You know, we had a month there. I think, yeah, it was the end of January. So we had February, racing kicks off around here in March. And then I think the points started in April. I think it was April 1st.
Do you feel like you had a head start going in? You know, that's a question that somebody asked me. I think that's pretty good to ask. You racing in January, did you feel like you know, obviously you had that month off before, or 2 months off before you really kicked back off, but do you feel like that kind of helped you guys have a good baseline and stuff to build off of for that year, or feel like it kind of slowed y'all down a little?
No, I think it definitely helped us. So going down to East Bay, I called Rodney Wing because he's fast down there.
Oh, yeah.
He told me, he said, look, it's a whole different track. He said, but if you're good around that dry slick stuff, he said, you'll be good there. So we went on the same stuff that we would run here, and we were good. So,
really?
But we did learn some things down there, you know, and we didn't have the finishes to show for it, but we definitely learned.
Right.
And so I think that helping us, or it did help us, we came home and kind of implemented a little bit of that into the cars, and we came out the very first night and won. So that was before the points started, though.
Right.
So that was the end of March. So I think it was the end of March. So
I got you.
Anyway, we won one before the start of the points out here at Outlaw. And then 2 weeks later, we won on the first night of the points. Hmm. So then I was like, okay.
That place is a statement right there. You know, y'all are going to be tough this year, you know.
Yeah, yes, you know, and it builds your confidence. That's the biggest thing is, you know, and that's – we'll get to the confidence part in just a minute. But, you know, that gave me the confidence, hey, you know, we can do this if we have a little luck with us.
Right, right.
So we go in the next – I don't know, 2 months, and can't win.
Really?
No.
So you had a winless streak for about 2 months straight.
I think I run 5 seconds in a row. And
it's terrible.
I was getting mad, you know. I mean, we're running second, so it's nothing to be mad about.
Right, right.
But knowing we have to win to get these points, and it might not have been 5 seconds, but It was four or five, you know. So anyway, I come home and me and Joey's texting, and one day, and he's like, hey, you got to do better. He's like, I know you're doing what you can, but you got to do better. So I'm like, man, here we go. So went to the shop, and you know, I work 6 to 4:30 every day. Get to the shop around 5:30 and work till 9 or 10 o'clock at night, and repeat every day. So kind of go through the car front to back, and I really don't know what we found, but the next 3 or 4 months was amazing. So we went to Deep South, and I had run second at Hattiesburg Friday night.
Right.
So I was and the guy we're chasing won for the points, you know. So I'm like, all right, we got to figure something out.
Yep.
So we go back and kind of put the car a little bit closer back to baseline, comes into the thing of thinking we're smarter than the engineers, right? So get it a little bit closer, and we go to Deep South, and it was good. It won that night, and then won 2 weeks later. And then we went to Baton Rouge for the Luke Bennett Memorial Race over there and won there. And that one was special. But it was like the next 2 months, I couldn't do anything wrong. My confidence was up here. And, I really like to be humble.
Right.
And yeah. I'm not trying to brag, but I went to the track every week with enough confidence in myself, mainly, to know that I could win that night.
Right.
So when we rolled out on the track, the car was where it needed to be, and I did my job for 20 laps, and it worked out for us. So, but no, we went into that season, and thankful for my wife and Joey and my dad, my mom, my son. I got at that time he was 10 years old, but they all sacrificed a lot. You know, a lot of hours for the family and a lot of money for Joey. But we said going into it, like I said earlier, if we were going to do it, that was going to be the season. And right. So that was mine and Jessica's deal. My wife was, you know, we're going to do this as hard as we got to, and then next year we'll do what you want to do.
So right.
That's kind of been why we have slowed our operation down this year.
Right.
And but it was a lot of fun. So
stepping back on that, you know, you said your confidence was up and stuff like that. And it's, you know, I understand what you're saying on that, you know, not trying to be cocky and things like that, but also showing up knowing that you can win and, you know, that side of it. Do you think it was the maintenance that you did weekly? Were you doing more in the shop than you ever had in that window of time? Or was it simply the fact that you're winning, so you're confident that you can continue to win? And then the other question was, I know you said that you got the car closer to its baseline and it was really good. Were you making a lot of adjustments every night, or did it come down to a point of where the car was this in hot laps, the car was this in qualifying, the heat race, if there was one, and then the feature, and you just adjusted driving style, or were you making actual adjustments to your race car?
So the confidence level definitely helps, I feel like. The racing every week kept me sharp.
Right.
But the maintenance, yes, I was working in the shop every night, which I know just about every racer in the country does that. You
right,
know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm not saying I was doing any more or any less than anybody else, but we raced 30 something times, we had zero DNFs. So
that's saying something. I mean, that right there proves your maintenance program was top notch, you know?
Yes. So, you know, and it's a big deal of being able to afford something when you need it.
Right.
Like, you know, in the past, we might have to go another week or two before we could fix that. You know, it wasn't bad.
Right.
But it wasn't great.
It was there.
That's
it was
right.
Something.
So,
yeah.
You know, I was fortunate enough, and if we needed something, we were able to get it. So that helps a ton. Obviously, you can't win a championship if you can't finish, right?
Right.
So if we race on Friday, we wash cars on Saturday. And, if we race on Saturday, we wash on Sunday. That's just kind of how it works. That way, if we need to order something that we don't have, we can get it coming.
You knew on Monday morning what you had to have.
That's right. We're not waiting on stuff. We're not trying to limp through the next weekend because I was lazy and didn't get up and figure out what we need.
Right.
So what was the second part of that question?
Were you making a lot of adjustments throughout the night?
So yes and no. That Luke Bennett benefit race.
Right.
That's when we kind of learned what the car wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to the racetrack with one package. After hot laps, there was a small change. And it was the same every time we went to the racetrack. And then if we run heats, of course, not all our tracks run heats, but come feature race time, that car was the same car setup-wise for the rest of the season.
Really?
So some nights it was better than others. I might have to drive a little more crooked.
Right.
I might have to drive a little more straight. But I knew And in my mind, it was better for me because I knew what that car was going to do when I got there.
Right.
You know, I didn't have to tiptoe in turn one on the start of the race. I knew what it was going to do. Now, if it kicked out, then I knew I wasn't fixing to go down there and spin it out.
Right, right.
So, I almost lost one night. I probably should have tightened up, but I didn't. And coming through lap traffic, I climbed the wall at Baton Rouge and was able to get off of it and caution come out and for another car, not me. But we was able to win that one that night, but then we needed some ball joints. So.
Well, I think it's interesting that you say that, you know, and just dabbling on that, Tyler Wolf, I don't know if you know who he is or not, but earlier this season in Votto, New Mexico, when we were at Votto racing that deal, that was the same theory that Tyler Wolf had. Like, look, the more adjustments you make, you know, you're trying to adjust to a track state, but a lot of more times than not, you're going to miss. So it's best just to leave it in this window, and you know you're not going to spin it out when you go down. It's confidence. It's a confidence thing. So it's interesting that you say that as well, you know, and that just proves that there's some truth to that. You know, that's the way to do it. And as for us, you know, in our stuff, it's kind of the same way. We're making about the same five or six adjustments a night, and we don't differentiate from that. You know, we stay in that window. So I think that was interesting to me to hear that. So,
yeah, just for me, I try to keep it simple and try to keep it basic, but you do got to go out on a limb every now and again. But the way we were racing the same three or four tracks. So that was, it was probably more of a confidence thing for me.
Right.
Because like I said, I knew what it was going to do, or at least I thought I knew what it was going to do. Getting off in turn one. So in this crate racing, if you give up five car lengths getting in turn one because you don't know what it's going to do, it's hard to make them up.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. So that's going to conclude that one right there, and we'll pick back up here in just a second. All right, so just kind of dabbling more on your preparation and stuff like that. I don't want to get too deep into it, but let's talk about the mental side of it from a – from a points perspective, what were you looking for weekly in points? As the weeks winded down, I know you were looking at so-and-so's got X amount of points. And then were you hunting those guys down weekly? Like, were you going to the tracks they were at? Or were you trying to go to the tracks that they weren't at to rack up those points?
The start of the season, we had a rain out locally, and they had the big national race at Why Not. And at the time, we were no good at Why Not, so we elected to stay home. And so we got a race behind. So I think weeks 1 through, say, 10, I was third in the points. But mathematically, if I would have run third, you know, I would catch him. And then if I run second, I would pass him. So we just kept digging and going to the racetrack every week. And when we got to that 10 or 11 week stretch, you know, I believe we won that week and we took the lead. And we were going back and forth between Hattiesburg, Deep South, and Baton Rouge. And just trying to do what we could. And we were chasing the guys that were leading it and running second. You know, I kind of knew where they were going to go. I don't talk to them that much. I do talk to them at the racetrack.
Right.
But I knew in my mind, at least, and it proved right that they were not going to travel off.
Right. So were you thinking from a racer's perspective of like, well, if I'm racing for points, I'm going here, so that's where they're going to be? Or were you like, well, they did mention on last Friday that they were probably going to be, or how did, you know, was it just a in your mind, if I was them, I'd go here, or was it?
Yeah, that's how it worked out. You know, if I were them, this is where I'd go. And, you know, we all live 40 minutes from Hattiesburg. So right. On Friday nights when they race, we're going to Hattiesburg.
Right.
You know, so the weeks that Hattiesburg did not race them, were weeks that Baton Rouge were racing. So Baton Rouge is the only Friday night track around.
Right.
So I knew they were going to race twice a year or twice a weekend. Yep. They have done it for years. So I knew they were going to Baton Rouge. So we had to go to Baton Rouge and try to outrun them. And fortunate enough, we did, and we were able to get points. And we got down towards the end, and I think it was 6 weeks left. We won at Baton Rouge on Friday night. So to back up a little bit, that was kind of a rough week. And to even go back to the start of this, I should kind of hit on, yes, we were running for points all year, but right. my wife was pregnant.
Okay.
So the baby was due in August. So we knew that if there were any complications, then obviously family comes first, right?
Right, right. So, that's where it would have to step away on that.
That's right. So I think it was 6 weeks left. Mason was born on a Monday. We everything went great. We got home from the hospital on Wednesday, and Jessica said, "Are you racing this weekend?" I said, "I don't know. I mean, I don't want to leave y'all here." And she said, "You got to go."
Really?
So Thursday night, I was in the shop and getting stuff ready, and Dad and I left Friday afternoon and went to Baton Rouge, and that might have been the night I climbed the wall. I can't remember, but we won that night. So mathematically, they could still catch us.
Right.
So the next week, Hattiesburg was not racing, I don't think. The only place racing was Jackson. Hmm. So of anybody that knows about me, I'm not a fan of Jackson. And it's nothing really personal against Jackson. I'm just not good there.
Right.
You know, so – but – they were the only track racing, so I knew we had to go. So I talked to Dad, and my mom went that night, and we got there, and we were terrible. I mean terrible. We were running sixth or seventh in the feature race, and the track was right against the wall. You couldn't see the wall, so I elected to pull off. And I didn't want to demolish it with 5 weeks to go because I was this close
right.
to wrapping that deal up. So I pulled off, and the 47 car was leading the race. Mm. So he had to win that night to have a shot.
Really?
So he was leading the race. I pulled off to hopefully just to fight another day.
Yeah. Right.
So get out of the car, go up in the stands, and I'm watching, and he is checked out on the field. And I'm like, well, we got to go next week and be on our A game.
Yeah, we got to battle back again.
So the 21 car, Ryan Colby, was about, I don't know, 8 laps to go, is tracking him down.
Really?
In a hurry. Okay. So I think 47 led until coming off of 4 to the checkered.
Really?
And the 21 car edged him out. So then that mathematically wrapped it up unless they had a makeup feature somewhere. So, you know, luckily they didn't.
If you weren't a Ryan Colby fan, you were that night.
That's
for
right.
Sure.
That's right. Yeah. You know, we and actually we had me and Ryan, we had become friends, and we were parked right next to him. So it was it was a little celebration down there for him and us, and there were no makeup races after that. So with 5 weeks remaining, we had locked up the
y'all mathematically sealed the deal.
That's right.
So, and it's kind of a similar deal looking at our point structure. You know, we've got 6 weeks to go, 6 or 7 weeks roughly to go, and if David Williamson has, I believe, 3 or 4 more good nights, finishing third or better, mathematically it's over with. We cannot get him. So kind of the same deal. A little bit later on, we'll figure that out. But he's kind of in the same situation that you're in
right.
on that. So But that's interesting. I didn't know that that with 5 weeks to go, you were able to kind of capture the whole deal right there.
Yeah, so. I think it was 5 weeks. But yeah, you know, it was, we had gotten real good at math over the 14 or 15 weeks there, you know, so we had figured it up that he had to win that night, and thankfully Ryan got him. And after that, we still went every week,
right?
But it got a little easier, and the pressure got off of you, you know.
Yeah,
because you start the season, and even though we were winning races and our confidence was high, there's still a lot of pressure,
right?
You know, and you know, when we're working on the cars in the shop during the week, it's just Joey and I.
Yeah,
that's it. Heather will come out there when she can. But for 99% of the time, it's him and I out there. So, you know, we prepare the cars like we can, and then we have some great people that come to the racetrack and help us. But once you get on that racetrack, you know, I mean, you know, as a driver, right, it's all in our hands. I mean, they can give us the best car possible. And if we go down there and bomb and turn one, you know, you not only do you let yourself down, but you let your whole crew down.
Right,
you
right.
Know, so it's a lot of pressure, but it's very rewarding on those good nights.
Well, speaking on that right there, what is the most, obviously Ryan Colby helping you out, helping you seal the deal right there is pretty special. But what would you say, I guess your most memorable time would be that 6 week mark right there at Luke Bennett's Memorial race. Is that what you would?
That's it. And,
okay.
And it was special at the time. But I didn't know how special it was. Obviously, I was excited to win the race. I mean, there was 24 cars showed up. We had never been to Baton Rouge before. So I bombed my qualifying lap. I jumped a cushion. Still qualified third. So
you got lucky.
Yeah. You know, I mean, so, and was able to win the heat race. I think we started third in the feature race and won it right around the bottom. I mean, I know you did it right around the bottom earlier in the year, but last year, the times that we went after that, I had to beat the wall down.
Right.
So that was the only race that we were able to win on the bottom. And we took the lead on, I think, lap two and led the whole thing. But the reason I say I didn't know it was as special as it was when I crossed the scales and seen my dad's face. You know, he was more excited than I was. And – I mean, me and my dad are very close, just right, like you and your dad. But I didn't know how special it was even in that time until we got the news in November that he had the cancer. And then just reflecting back on how happy he was to see me,
right,
you know, winning, was it really sunk in. And I still have that video on my phone, and, you know, he, of course, he'll tell me, you know, even though I'm the one driving a race car, he makes all 20 laps with me or 30, however many we race.
Right.
But I have the video. I watch it whenever I come across it on my phone, and he is into it, you know. So he has always been my biggest supporter, minus my wife and my mom, obviously. When I'm on the track, that's who they're rooting for, you know what I mean? But Dad has been there through thick and thin, and that one was just real special, and because just to see that he was probably more excited about that than I was.
Right. It definitely is. Family is certainly everything, and when you're able to experience things like that, I know especially whenever I see Dad happy, like I guess no one else, you can have everybody else mad at you, but as long as they're okay with you, and you know they're happy, who else matters, you know? So
yes,
I definitely know that. And along the lines of that, your dad did recover from cancer. It did not take a major toll on him.
No, he has actually been doing very good. He completed his chemo treatments and all that, and he's kind of on a maintenance program now. And as of right now, the cancer cells are kind of dead.
Good.
So that's great news, and but still, you know, I'm spending as much time as I can with him, and not that we didn't spend a lot of time before, but
right,
you know, it's just now that was a big eye opener that there is more to life. And
certainly,
I'm not getting any younger, and definitely neither is he. So that was kind of the, you know, this year we changed our number, and or I changed my number, and with the blessing of Joey, you know, his number has always been 27. And he was 27 when he started racing. That's how old he was. So that's where the number came from. So, but we switched to the K3 this year, and that was the number that my dad raced when I was a kid out at Suncoast Speedway.
Okay.
So back then in the pro stock class, it paid $50 to win the heat race and $600 to win the feature in 92. And they had probably $5,000 in the car, truck, and trailer. So he was actually racing for a living. He didn't have a job at that point in time.
Really?
So just to show you how things have changed and
still race for the same amount of money.
Still race for the same amount of money.
But it costs about 8 to 10 times more.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, no fault to the track owners.
Right.
And
right.
I'm not trying to poke anybody there, but
certainly,
you know, back then it was a lot easier for everybody to race. You know, I mean, you know, let's just face it. Most of your local Saturday night racers are working people.
100%.
So there's that small amount that they're going to the racetrack no matter what. But for the most part, you know, they can't go this week because they can't afford the tires or whatever. And, I mean, tires have gotten outrageous.
Oh, it's outrageous.
It was a lot better racing back then, probably. And I don't know if it was any more fun because I have a blast when I go racing. But
right, yeah.
Just to kind of, you know, talk about how times have changed and but yeah, so Dad, you know, he won a lot of races that year in that Pro Stock car and had a lot of good races with Wallace Allen and there's another one that for the life of me I can't remember his name, but
oh, there's tons. I've been told countless stories about how they used to duke it out every Friday and Saturday, Sunday, just every weekend. Yeah. They just duked it out and it was
Wallace and Mitchell Williams. Yep. And you know, all the Billy Joe Shonowitz and all those, you know, from around here. And you know, that was, but so that's where the number comes from, is that's the number that I remember when I was a kid. And then I actually drove that car in a late model when I was a teenager, and it was number K3. So that was the only number that him and I had both run. And so it just made it kind of special with everything that was going on. And just to pay a little tribute to him for that.
Well, that's neat. I think it's really neat that you were able to do that while he was still alive. I know that's something that we wish we would have done while my papa was still here, is run the 07 and have that rap, you know, kind of surprise him with that while he was still around so that we could all enjoy it. So I think that's really neat that you did that, and I hope that y'all continue to do that. I like it.
So, yeah, it was, you know, so it's one of those things that you probably never think about, you know, while everything's going good. And I know that was a little unexpected, or a lot unexpected.
It was,
you know,
for sure.
It caught us all off guard. And, I mean, he was a great man. And, you know, I didn't know him great, but for sure, every time we were at the racetrack, he definitely spoke. And, you know, like he knew me for years, which he probably did, you know, being around the racetrack. He knew more about me than I did about him, for sure.
Yeah. So, not to kill the happy moments and stuff, but let's talk about the rivalries while you were doing this. Were there any? Did you ever have any confrontations while running this, or was it just kind of a smooth selling deal? Was it drivers? Was it track owners? Was it, you know, what problems did you face at the racetrack?
So with racing, there's always going to be some kind of rivalry, right? Whether you know it or not.
Oh, yeah.
So especially with all the social media now, and you know, everybody gets on there and says their piece, and so, but yes, there was rivalries. We had a little rivalry with the 47 camp, and I'm not talking bad about them, but
right.
We had a couple of run-ins, and we actually got put on probation by Crusa. So we had to straighten up and finish the season out there. And
Y'all had to hug it out and go on.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah, we had a meeting and lots of phone calls back and forth with the CRUSA officials, and then we had to meet at the track and talk it out. And we both said our piece. Now, you know, whether we both agreed with it, that's probably still to be determined. But yeah, you're going to have rivalries, and you know, as far as the racers go, we're all out there to win. Yeah, right. I mean, nobody goes there to run second. So when you're winning, you always have a little target on your back.
You do.
And then the more you win, the more people want to talk.
Right.
And they want to say you're cheating or you're doing this or you're doing that. So you just kind of got to brush that stuff off. You know, especially I take a lot of pride in saying that I won that deal with a lot of hard work, but 100% legal all year long.
And that says a lot right there. I mean, that right there is worth the championship in itself, you know, because there's a lot of people that win championships and win events and stuff, and whether they get caught or not, you know, you have to live with that. So I think that right there is worth a lot for you to be able to say that you won that deal 100% legal. You know, that makes it worth even more. All right, so we discussed all of that stuff. We walked through, you know, you racing for points and the highs and lows of it, the memories made, how you won it. And, you know, now I'd like to know, what was it like to win it? What did you receive from that, and how did it impact your racing career?
So, I don't know. It was just a great feeling to accomplish a goal that you set out to do, and to do it with all the great people that helped us week in and week out, and spent their Saturday nights and Sunday mornings, or Friday nights and Saturday mornings, you know, driving. And it was rough. It was a lot of miles. Of course, I know I'm not talking to you about miles, but
no, we're talking about, you know, your crate race and yeah, stuff. So for sure,
it was a lot of hours out on the road, and it was fun. We got $10,000 check and the trophy, and it hasn't changed me. I like to say it hasn't changed me, you know.
Who got the trophy? Is it in Joey's shop, or is it at your house?
The trophy's at my shop.
Okay.
The trophy and the check is at, or the big check is at my shop, and the check you take to the bank, it went to Joey.
Of course.
So I would rather the trophy myself anyway. Yeah, I had never had any money, so didn't need any then.
Right, right.
So yeah, you can spend the money, but you as long as that trophy's still there, yeah, you still got all the memories, right?
That's right.
Sitting here looking at your trophies behind you and thinking, you know, even when all the money's gone and all the race cars are gone,
those aren't going.
That's
anywhere.
Right. You still got all those memories. So
that's right.
It was I was very grateful for the people that stuck it out with me, and like I said, it was a win and very rewarding to wrap that deal up and for a goal that we set out in March and we race all the way to October.
Well, so let me ask you this about it. Did you acquire any product sponsorships, any inquiring about driving other equipment? Was it, or you know, did any of that take place, or was it, you know, not just because obviously it's a major an accomplishment, but did anything else unfold?
No. We reached out to a couple of people and, you know, sent some emails, made some phone calls, and they said, we'll think about it and do this and do that. But no, you know, we have our sponsors that helped us all year, and, they came back this year. So, but no, nobody called, wanted to know if I wanted to drive. I don't know what the answer would be if that happened, honestly.
It'd be a hard decision to make for sure.
It would be, you know, because not only can I race like I want to now with Joey, you know, but Joey and I started this deal as friends from years ago. But we really weren't close friends, but now, I mean, I consider Joey to be probably one of my closest friends. And, so it would be hard. And if I was even considering that move, I would have to talk it over with him first, to be honest with you, you know, and just get his opinion, because, you know, through this whole deal and the way our friendship is built, not only is he the car owner, but I go to him for advice, life advice all the time. And so probably to answer your question about what I gained from winning that was, and not only from winning it, but it is part of the whole, you know, the whole picture here is probably the friendship with Joey that we have gained. And not only me, my whole family.
Right.
He has become part of the family. Yep. And he has welcomed us all in like we're his family. So that's it would be a hard decision if I was to get a call tomorrow and say, hey, would you come drive this? Now, we're not talking about something that, hey, you know, my guy's out this week.
Right.
And,
yeah.
Can you come drive?
We're talking about a full time ride.
A long term thing.
Right.
And, you know, and that would be another question that I'd have to bring up and ask my wife, Jessica. You know, she's very supportive of what I do, and she does not complain hardly at all. I'm not going to say she doesn't complain, but she does. So, but I'm telling you, I probably have the best wife out there. And, but we do have two kids now. We have an 11-year-old and one that just turned one. So, you know, I'm not, like I said, I'm not getting any younger. I'm 37 now. And some days I wake up, I feel 60, and some days I feel like I can still duke it out with with y'all young boys. So,
well, that's awesome. Well, along the lines of that, it's great that you talk about that right there. So this is going to be our closing question, and I'll let you go have the rest of your evening. And I'm going to have to read this because, like I said, this is something that we're implementing in. It's new. So, but as a 21-year-old trying to navigate through life, I want to know maybe if there's something that you recommend I don't do or something that I should do. My question is, if you could go back to being 21 years old in the exact same environment that you were in, except you would have the knowledge and understanding of the things that you do today, is there anything you would do differently?
Yes.
What would you do differently?
So I have to say this and go ahead and tell you that I am very happy with the way my life turned out, and I would not want it any other way as far as my family goes.
Right. So everything ultimately happens for a reason, and that is part of that. It is a disclaimer. Everything happens for a reason. Everything's intentional, you know. But I'm just curious if there's anything that like I said, you may do differently.
Yeah, so that is a disclaimer mainly for my wife, you know, so she doesn't get on me for saying this, but so if I was 21 again and knew what I know now, and I would not let girls get in my way. So, you know, back then, turned 21. Actually, I think it was when I was 18. I had the opportunity to go and spend the summer and work for Mike Bolin at Bolin Performance and Trackstar Race Cars. But I didn't, and I was chasing a girl, and so
was it your wife? Can I ask that?
No, it was not.
Okay. So, well, all the more reason.
Yeah, that's okay. That was the reason for the disclaimer.
Yep.
So no, it was not. But especially with social media nowadays, you see these Lucas Oil late model teams and these USMTS guys posting constantly, looking for help.
Mm-hmm.
So I really wish that I would have spent that time at Mike Bolin's shop and learned what I could. You know, you never know where that might take you.
Right.
So they were building cars left and right at that time. And I mean, they're still building cars now.
Right.
So, you know, the connections that I could have made back then, and even, you know, we didn't have Facebook back then. So, but to go out on the road and work with one of these teams just to gather that knowledge and live that life. And, you know, I tell everybody, they say, you know, it must be nice for these guys that race for a living, right? But I look at it as, I'm sure it is nice, you know.
Right.
But you're racing for a living. Right? So exactly. It's very stressful, I'm sure. And, yeah, I mean, you take yourself. You know, you're racing for the paycheck, right?
Right.
So if you have a couple of strings of bad luck, and I mean, it really gets into
your pocket.
It gets rough. You know, I would have liked to race full time, but we all know that that's not practical for most people.
Right.
But if I could do it over again, I would go as far as it would take me. Like I said, I am more than happy with the way everything turned out. But there's always that, you know, thought in your mind that where could we have been had I done this different?
What could have been?
That's right. Yep. So, but it's all good. Yep. You know, we have made some incredible friends along the way. Yep. And you know, you find out that most people at the racetrack will give you the shirt off their back.
Yep. For the most part.
Yep. So, you know, like last week, I seen your dad thank David Williamson for a generator.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, y'all are battling in the points right now.
Yep.
And David's, he's a good friend. We talk a lot. So, but he's one of the good guys out there. And I met him through racing. And so.
And that's what I'll say. You know, a lot of guys that are battling it out for points, I don't think they really talk a whole lot. And if they do talk, it's probably not, you know, a civil conversation, you know.
Yeah.
And David and I, we're great. We have a great friendship and stuff like that. And like you said, he helped us out so that we were able to get home and stuff like that. So, yeah, it definitely is. You in the racing community, man, it's one big family. Literally, you know, you may be mad at each other one week, but you lend a helping hand when
that's
in
right.
need. So,
yeah. You know, I have argued and fought with my own family and argued and fought with my racing family. So,
yep.
You know, it all comes full circle, though.
It does.
You know, and I'm a firm believer in you get into something what you put out.
Yep.
So, you know, if somebody needs it and I have it, they're more than welcome to it.
Yep.
And I just hope that when the circle comes back around, that if I'm the one needing it, that I have it. So, yeah. Because, you know, not all of us have everything in the trailer that you can think of.
Right.
And, so you know, you might get it. We were talking earlier, you know, about different uppers and lowers and stuff. And, you know, and so if you go to some of these racetracks and you tear up in hot laps, and I mean, that could be the end of your night unless, you know, you got the family to kind of help you out. So
right. Well, and that's real quick. We'll touch on this. I wrecked the first night out. I wrecked this thing on Friday night. Bent the spindle. Killed the rotor. I forget what else I tore up.
Ball joints.
Yeah. And I'm like, what are we gonna do? We talked to Scott Ladner. Scott Ladner, actually, another, you know, part of the racing family, fixed our carburetor right there at the track. And we're like, okay, we're fixed. We're ready to go, but we have no parts. So I forget who recommended or said, hey, call them. So I message you and Joey, and y'all are like, yeah, sure enough, here it is. Y'all are welcome to whatever we have. And, you know, if it hadn't have been for you guys right there, we wouldn't have been able to race that weekend. And that's actually one of the nights that is on our points right now that is, you know, keeping us out front. So had we not been able to race that weekend, there's no telling where we'd be at right now. So certainly very appreciative for the racing family and stuff like that. And for sure, it, like we talked about, it's one big happy family. So on that note, Chase, we appreciate you being on here. We enjoyed having you. Thank you for the words of wisdom that you put out and for the things that you shared with us. Definitely going to apply a few things to our race program and hopefully end up capturing the points here. But even if we don't, If David Williamson wins it, it'll be all right, I reckon. Yeah. So
yeah, thanks for having me, and good luck to both of y'all. You know, I'm very good friends with both of y'all. So definitely pulling for both of you. And if it goes one way or another, and I congratulate one of y'all on Facebook, don't get upset. So
no hard feelings.
It's just part of racing. You know, there's got to be a winner and a loser, and we all don't want to be the loser. So, but that's how it works. So I'm glad that it's y'all this year, not me.
I heard that. Well, cool deal. Chase Cooper, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Off the Gas and On the Mic with Chase Holland. What'd you think about what you heard? Please follow for more content just like this.